So I'm Teal Phelps-Bondaroff, our research coordinator, and this is a project that we've been working on, as Ian said, since pretty much 2019. So I got involved with the BCHA way back in the day because I was deeply annoyed by the fact that we started our legislature, every daily session of the legislature opened with a prayer. And then we've expanded our work on legislative prayer to look at municipalities. And so what I'm talking about today is a report that's coming out in November. So we're putting finishing touches on it. And the authors are myself, Ian, and our previous researcher, Olivia Jensen. And this is a part of our ongoing suite of research. So what I'm going to kind of talk about is I'll situate the project in our broader universe of projects in legislative prayer. Some of you heard about this a few times. But basically, we're looking at prayer in the BC legislature, prayer in municipal councils in BC. We had a report come out for prayer in municipal councils in Ontario, Manitoba. We have a report coming out for Alberta, Saskatchewan, and the Maritimes. And we have an update report in the future for Ontario. So our researchers are just finishing gathering the data on that. This is one of the small part of what we do in the research team, but it's also one where we can have a lot of impact. So what I'm talking about today is some of the impact that we've had. Like our research is changing procedures and policies and making the world a little more secular and keeping the separation of religion and government a little more stronger. So we started looking at this in 2020 because we were looking at inaugural meetings and regular council meetings in British Columbia. Basically what happened was, it was 2018, I ran for city council, lost the election, but was watching the inaugural meeting for Saanich, and they had two religious prayers in it. They invited two pastors from different Christian denominations to deliver prayers, and I'm like, you can't do that. Talk to Ian. We put together a team, and we looked at the municipal councils for every single meetings for every single municipality in BC. Before I get into that, though, what I'm going to talk about today is I'll talk about why that's a problem. So there's a Supreme Court ruling called Saguenay from 2015, which is pretty much my favorite Supreme Court case at this point. And we'll be talking a bit about that. I'll talk about our 2018 study's findings, the approach that we've taken, the method, the summary of the advocacy that we did. This is advocacy research. This isn't just me hanging out in my research hovel churning out papers. We use this research to change the world, and we've been succeeding in doing that. I'll talk about the study findings from 2022. We'll have some discussions around the major themes. I'm going to compare us a little bit to other provinces, but like not that much because I could talk about it for probably several days. And then there'll be a conclusion, and we can do questions and chat a bit more about some of our other projects. Does this sound like a good plan? I'm getting nods. This is great. Okay, so 2018, we launched the report. We found prayers in 23 inaugural council meetings. Now, we found a few errors in our research. We missed a couple. So our team has gone back to look, and we found two more. So I think it's actually 25. So adding to our previous list, we can put West Kelowna and Abbotsford in the hot box for 2018. And why is this? Oh, we'll come to Saguenay in a second. Sorry, I've got a BC report. Let's start with Saguenay. Let's take a step back. The year is 2006. Alain Simoneau, who lives in Saguenay in Quebec, attends his municipal council meeting, and he is disappointed that it opens with a prayer. He talks to the city. He's like, hey, this isn't very inclusive. It's a very Christian prayer. People are crossing themselves. Maybe we shouldn't be doing this. They don't really listen. So he takes a complaint and he works it through the legal system. And I'm not going to take you on the whole journey because it's a long one. The decision was in 2015. So you can imagine 2006 to 2015, Alain is, you know, he's toughing it out. These are good people. Basically, it goes through the Commission des droits de la personne et des droits de jeunesse, and then it goes to the Quebec Human Rights Tribunal, the Quebec Court of Appeal. It reaches the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court upholds the ruling of a tribunal, which basically says you can't have prayer in a municipal council meeting. And the exact part of the ruling, which is relevant, I'll read it out here, and I apologize for reading a block of legal text, but it says the state has to be neutral when it comes to questions of religion, and explains what that means. To ensure that the state appears to be open to all points of view, regardless of their spiritual basis, far from requiring separation, true neutrality requires that the state neither favor nor hinder any religion, and abstain from taking a position on the subject. Even if a religious practice engaged in by the state is inclusive, it may nevertheless exclude non-believers. That's paragraph 137. So basically, the idea is like, look, you can't have a prayer because it excludes people from other religions, but also excludes non-believers. And you shouldn't be doing it. So it's interesting, it's true neutrality and not separation of religion and government. They're saying the state just has to abstain from having a position. And part of the thing that I like about this ruling was, there's one line, I don't have this one written down, but it's basically, you know, what's the difference between supporting something and opposing something? Well, if you support religion, you invite the pastor to give a prayer. And if you don't support something, you invite someone like Ian or myself to give an affirmation that there is no God. True neutrality is just like, maybe we shouldn't invite any of these people to the council meeting. Let's not bring it up. Let's just get to work. Let's start planning our city. So that's kind of where the Supreme Court, well, that is what the Supreme Court said. However, not everyone got the memo. So what we found is there were a lot of municipalities opening with prayers, and spoiler alert, there's a lot of Christian prayers and religious prayers explicitly. They started sort of petering off after Saguenay, but we found quite a lot of them had prayer. So like I said, 25 municipalities had prayer in their inaugural meetings. I'll have to explain what that is. So basically, most municipal councils will meet once a week. And for me, it's Monday night, so I'm going back to Saanich. Monday night, I'm going to be in dog off leash, on leash, an intense conversation about dogs on leashes, Monday night. Now, there's regular council meetings Monday night. Sometimes we have special meetings. But after the election, there's an inaugural meeting where all the councillors take their oath of office. There's often a bagpiper. There's a judge. Your families are there. It's fancy. And that's kind of got more pomp and circumstance. And what we found was those meetings have prayer. We didn't find prayers in any of the regular meetings. Come on in, welcome. The regular meetings, we went through 5 meetings on average. So we'd take 5 meetings randomly selected from past meetings of council to see if they had any prayer. None of them did. So that's great. But the inaugural meetings, where there's a bit more pomp and circumstance, had prayer. 25 municipalities in 2018. Now, we looked at them all. And I mean, there's only 25 of them, so the quantitative analysis is not exactly like big N size. But we found that all of them were Christian, and 73.9 of them were delivered by men. This is probably not going to come as a surprise to anyone, but you know, it's nice to have the numbers. So we did that research, and then we did some advocacy between times. Here, let me get my notes on this here. Oh, I should just, one other thing about Saguenay was like, this isn't like a wishy-washy Supreme Court ruling. The Supreme Court says that the duty of religious neutrality is a base, it's a democratic imperative. Like, this isn't just like, hey, you know, be nice, you know, no prayer, it's okay. No, this is imperative to our legal system, to our democratic system. So it's a very strong ruling, and it's one that we've been using for a few years now, haven't we? So, we didn't find any like trends in municipalities that had prayer in 2018. Like there was big cities, you've got Parksville, you got Peachland, you've got Nelson, Nanaimo, Langley, Trail, Victoria, Saanich, Spall Machine. Like there wasn't really a trend in population or geography. Like we don't have, I mean, we have the interior, but like, we don't really have like a weird Bible Belt in British Columbia. It was just sort of, some municipalities didn't get the memo for whatever reason. And we also found that it was often, I think, kind of the decision of like, sometimes administrators, sometimes the mayor, sometimes a combination of everything. And it's kind of chaotic when the inaugural meeting rolls around. It's after an election, there's a new government or new councillors. So sometimes it might just be we do what we've always done. And sometimes the mayor's like, hey, I'd like to throw some prayers in there. And sometimes they just go through the forms they've done before. So what we did is, I think I've covered the method quite a lot here, but we went back and looked at every municipal council meeting, their inaugural meeting in 2022. So it's November 2022, November 7th, November 14th, sometime in and around there. We looked at the minutes, the agendas, news stories around the meeting, and audio recordings of the meeting. A lot of them are streamed, and we looked for prayer. Now, we had to watch the videos where possible because sometimes the minutes don't include a prayer, or they have a thing that says blessing, and no blessing took place. Or they have a blessing, and it turns out it's like the local indigenous elder who's drumming. And we'll talk a bit about why that doesn't really fit our criteria for a prayer in a bit, and why that's more complicated. So we looked through them all, and then we would write down where there was a prayer, the title, the affiliation, the gender of the person delivering the prayer. We would contact the city if we couldn't find the information. I was joking with Ian beforehand that we filed some FOIs to small towns that have never had an FOI before. I was just at UBCM and met like the administrator of Belcarra. I'm like, you're FOI person, they're lovely. And they're like, we didn't expect to get an FOI from you. And they got 2 from us. And I think it's more than they get in about 5 years, but lovely, very helpful. 300 people in that city, in that village. So, you know, you probably don't get a lot of FOIs. Going through all these meetings, we found prayers, invocations, blessings, moments of silence, and a wide range of indigenous content. and where possible, we would transcribe all of this content. So what we found, again, 25 municipalities out of 162 had prayers in 2018. We were missing data for four, which we couldn't find it. Again, no trend. And the prayers themselves, ones that we could find, were overtly religious. We're not talking like there was one wishy-washy one that was like delivered by a pastor in Saanich, and it was like no mention of God, religion, or anything. But most of them were using words like God, Jesus, or Bible quotes. And there was some really weird stuff. You can see our full report where we highlight some of them. Like there was threats. There was weird like invocations of hellfire, strange stories. So these are people taking an opportunity to proselytize at a political meeting that is, you know, should be open to everybody. So we publish our report, comes out in 2020, January 2020. We contact all the municipalities with a nice, firm, but friendly Ian letter, and we had a mixed response. Some of the municipalities, they didn't get back to us. They get a lot of letters. You know, this is just one letter among others. So we heard nothing from a few of them. Some of them was like, hey, thank you. Classic reply email, acknowledge receipt, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. But some of them would engage with us in different levels of enthusiasm. So we had a couple that said, we won't do it again. Thank you for letting us know. Spall Machine, Trail. They were like, whoa, thanks for letting us know. Langley City actually passed a motion to receive our letter. So they acknowledged receipt and like didn't do a prayer again. The Township of Langley even amended their procedures bylaw to prevent them from doing prayer in the future. So these are municipalities that are like, hey, we didn't know. Thanks for letting us know. We'll change our procedures. Couple places push back. I think you had one kind of argue with you in the email there, Ian, didn't you? Was there one back and forth? Yeah, there's some places, you know, they were like, oh, it's not, it's okay. We don't think we think we can do that. Well, the Supreme Court says otherwise. We did media releases. We got news stories, podcasts, lectures like this. I know some of you went to some of those lectures. So this is part of our advocacy. So basically, my philosophy of how we do research activism is we do good quality academic research, and then we wave it around and sometimes hit people in the face with it until they listen, and this is how we get change. So building up to the 2022 elections, we're like, look, we know some municipalities are promised to change. Some of them never got back to us. So we wait for the election to happen. No, we didn't. It was before the election happened. We emailed municipalities and we're like, hey, friends, just so you know, you can't have prayer in your inaugural meetings. Someone got back to us and they were like, cool. A couple weeks before the inaugural meetings, we emailed everyone again because we went through their agendas. They have to release the agenda statutorily. I think it's 2 weeks before the meeting. So you can look at the agenda and it's like, it says prayer. It's like, hey, guys, can we maybe not have that? Some of them said yes. Some argue that's the one where they were arguing. That's right. There was some argument. But that one kind of worked. We had a bunch of places, and we were tracking this live as they would remove prayers from their meetings. And that was very impactful. But not all of them responded the way we wanted them to respond. So we had, and we were just updating our data because we were doing it live right after the election. So we're at 9 municipalities did have prayer in their inaugural meetings in 2022. So we went from 25 to 9, which is pretty good improvement, out of 161, which is not bad. One municipality, I think Jumbo Glacier, got removed from the list, which is why it's a bit confusing on all those things. So we had Belcarra, that was a female pastor. Delta was a male pastor. Parksville was a male pastor. Tumbler Ridge was a male pastor. West Kelowna was a male pastor. Most of them were, you're getting a trend here, right? There was a couple of preachers in there, fire chaplain, almost all men. And then Vancouver did something a bit weird. Vancouver didn't do prayer before. They decided that they were going to be super ecumenical, and they went with 5 prayers. And I'll talk about those in a separate section of my talk, because it seems like it's better, but it's not. So that's a bit of a problem. So we had 9 municipalities we were missing data, and our team is just currently cleaning up the data for 2022 because it was a crazy time. I'd just been elected. We were trying to get our information together right around the election. So we're cleaning up the data, making sure it's reliable, and then we'll release our report. There were some invocations by judges, so they were kind of like, hey guys, go get it. There was 3 minutes of silence, but those were all in memoriams, so recognizing members of council who passed away. And we notice a trend in some places where they don't feel comfortable abandoning prayer entirely. So instead, they will move to a moment of silence. And Silence could mean anything, right? You could be sitting there silently checking your phone, playing Candy Crush. You could be praying to your god or gods or goddesses. Or you could be getting your head in the game, giving yourself a pep talk, listening to Coldplay. Or I think you can do that now, live. Shameless plug, we don't have Coldplay tickets, do we? No. And we had three municipalities that had secular poems, which was a newer trend as well. And one of them was mine. I talked to the mayor, I'm like, hey, the last mayor had prayer in the meeting. Maybe we shouldn't do that. And he's like, yeah, okay. We found a poet. It wasn't hard. It's nice. Poets love being asked to give poems. They give an inspirational poem. Everybody was happy. And that's kind of the model we'd like other people to follow. So a couple fun stories here before I jump into some of the... just checking my notes here to see if I... Yeah, we live press releases. Here we go. Yeah, so the next thing was Indigenous content. So we have this unique data set. We had a team of amazing researchers look over all these municipal council meetings. And while we're there, we might as well take other information down. Like, it would be a pity not to gather more data. And we also noticed that you get content that kind of blurs the line, right? So some Indigenous content is a territorial acknowledgement, like we started our meeting with. It's an inaugural meeting, so often they'll invite an elder or a representative of the local First Nations community to deliver that territorial acknowledgement, but that's we start our meetings that way. Sometimes it's drumming or singing. Sometimes it's traditional welcome. And traditional welcomes can take lots of different forms. There's lots of different cultures and communities and traditions and protocols in British Columbia. And so what we found was a diversity of practices. And then sometimes it's framed as a blessing. And what we've started to find is when you ask someone to come to a meeting and give a prayer, even if they don't want to pray, they make their content fit that box. So there's one story, and I have it here in my notes, I'll find it as we get to it, but there's one instance where the person showed up and was like, I'd like to drum. I was asked to pray. We don't really pray where I come from, but I'll just drum. That's, I guess, our kind of prayer. And you can see he's like kind of making his content fit into what they've asked him to do. The Indigenous content is a discussion for a little later in my talk, so I'll get to that. Just to note that 114 municipalities in 2022 had Indigenous content. We're currently reviewing our data from 2018 because we didn't gather the data back then, and we'll be able to do comparisons to see how that's changed over time. I think it's not a spoiler alert, but spoiler alert, it's increased over time, which is a good trend for reconciliation, but does introduce some interesting aspects when it comes to what does that content look like. Okay, so 2018, this is the discussion part of the talk. We get to get into like the tofu and rice of the content. So 2018 is the first inaugural meeting after Saguenay. It's only been 3 years. Saguenay is 2015. So like maybe they didn't get the memo. So there's like it is the Constitution, right? There shouldn't be like a grace period, but like okay, fine. 2022 is now quite a bit of ways from Saguenay. So there really shouldn't be an excuse for prayer. And that's kind of where our stance is. Like okay, we were being really nice in 2020. Like, you guys, come on, let's make this work. Now it's like, hey, chop, chop. The Constitution says you can't do this. Don't do it again. So most of the municipalities that had prayer in the most recent inaugural meeting, what's really interesting is they didn't have prayer previously. There was only a couple of holdovers. West Kelowna and Parksville were examples of that, where they had prayer in both times. And I suspect part of this may have been that we didn't really hound municipalities that didn't previously have prayer because we just thought they wouldn't include it. Vancouver being a great example of that. Like, we didn't think Vancouver would add 5 prayers to their meeting, so like we didn't hound them about not having prayer. It would be kind of like a bit rude to like write everyone every week and be like, hey, don't include prayer in your meeting. Keep not including prayer in your meeting. Like, we could do an auto reply, but like it's not worth it, right? So I think part of it may have been that we didn't have as aggressive advocacy around some of these municipalities, but we're gonna kind of look at the numbers a little bit. What's really interesting in all of this conversation, and the context is, BC is becoming more secular. Not only do we have separation of religion and government and a duty of state neutrality, but 52.4% of people in British Columbia are non-affiliated with religious organizations, with religion rather. So that's quite significant. So even if you didn't have the Supreme Court ruling, the idea of making these spaces inclusive would mean like not starting with a religious prayer from one religion over others. Okay, what are the big trends that we notice? The first one, Christian hegemony. You probably already guessed it, all the prayers, except for the ones in Vancouver, which I'll get to momentarily, we're all Christian. So, 6 Christian prayers. What was interesting about the Vancouver prayers was that there were 2 Christian prayers of those 5. So it's not exactly like, we're trying to be ecumenical, but we're ecumenical, but like we have a very narrow definition of what that means. When we looked at the transcripts of the prayers we could find, They mention Jesus in Jesus' name, mighty name of Jesus. They're explicitly Christian. These aren't sort of ecumenical, wishy-washy statements that are somewhat inspired vaguely by religion. These are overtly Christian prayers. What's interesting too, and this is quite important, is that in a couple of municipalities, the person delivering the prayer solicited participation. So there's a difference between me coming up and saying, hey, I'm going to perform the teal dance. And there's another one before me saying, hey, everybody, get up and dance the teal dance. And even if I ask it super politely, I'm now asking you to participate in something. Now, if we're dancing, maybe we should, you know, loosen up a little bit. But when it comes to religious participation, that shifts from someone being endorsed by the state delivering a prayer to now exerting pressure on other people to do that. And that becomes an even greater problem. We've had this in school prayer issues where it's like, no, you can't just be like, hey, you three in the back, you don't want to participate in prayer? Go wait outside for a few minutes. That's fine, right? No, the Supreme Court has been very clear that's not okay. Asking people to participate is a problem. So in Parksville, when the person delivering the prayer says, pray with me, it seems super nice and friendly and welcoming. But now what they're doing is they're asking for participation. Or, and this is interesting too, in Delta, they ask people to stand. Now, if I ask you to pray with me, you could just be like, just nod off. You know, that's fine. But if I ask you to stand, now I'm asking you to identify yourself as a non-religious person. You have to physically not stand, or you're being coerced into standing. Neither of those two options are very good. And neither of those two options are supported by the Supreme Court, which says, this is not something you want to do. This is coercive. Let's not do that. We also, so that's a problem, right? There's coercive pressure being involved or forcing to identify yourself. Now, this may seem like not too big of a problem in a giant amphitheater in Vancouver when half the people are standing and some people are sitting and people are on their phone, but like Belcar is 300 people. Everyone's gonna know. And like, I'm super happy being, you know, out as someone who doesn't believe in religion and gods, but like in Belcar, maybe I'd be a little bit different. I don't know. It's a lovely town, by the way, but maybe you don't want to be the only town atheist. Right, or identify yourself as such. So the other thing was theocratic language. So not only do we have prayers that are religious in nature, but if you listen to them and the content and their intent, they're kind of getting at something that's a little bit more kind of strange. You know, one of the ones in Delta was wisdom and discernment to govern well on your behalf. So they're asking people, basically suggesting people, they're suggesting that the deity is responsible for the election of these people. Now, like I knocked on 10,000 doors in Saanich and covered over 1,000 kilometers by foot. And clearly, the deity definitely didn't have a hand in my election. But to suggest that the deity is responsible for an election or the people are governing on behalf of that deity, there's something sinister and theocratic about it. And yeah, it seems like, you know, flowery religious language. But when you listen to it, it seems problematic. And then the other element when it comes to language was implied group sentiment. Now, there's a difference between me getting up here and saying, I'd like to share with you my own personal story, and someone saying, we thank you, we pray on your behalf, together we are a body of people praying in Jesus' name. That suddenly becomes a collective expression. And you're sitting there like, no, I don't want that. You can't pray in my name. I don't participate in this. But you're all silent listeners, and you have no choice. Now you're being brought along for the ride. We're implying group sentiment, which, again, seems problematic. And this is why the Supreme Court is like, hey, let's not have prayer in these kinds of meetings. So for example, in West Kelowna, it was a performative conversation with God. The person delivering the prayer was having a personal conversation with God. So it's performative. Whereas in the other situations, it's like, we're going to pray together. And the other thing that just this kind of underscores, the Christian hegemony point, is, you know, Christianity is being elevated over other faith groups. You know, why do we have this one religion being overrepresented? Well, there's a large percentage of people in British Columbia who belong to this religion. But there's a lot of other religions out there. And there's different flavors of Christianity and sects and subsects and breakaway groups. And so when you have one religion being endorsed, you're actually endorsing a specific sect of that religion. So not only are you excluding, you know, the Buddhists and the Jews, but you're excluding the Anabaptists and the Southern Baptists and the Presbyterians. So it comes down to the reason of the state can't possibly adjudicate this. And we published a great paper on this. See our collected works. Oh, I love getting to say that. That's tons of fun. We now have collected works on this, by the way. Like, I think Ian and I and the research team now are probably the most published people on legislative prayer in Canada. Very achievable goal, but tons of content out there. Okay, the next major theme, other than Christian hegemony, was gender. Again, most of the people delivering the prayers are men. Probably not going to come as a surprise to you. There's a lot of there's some patriarchal elements to religion. I probably don't need to tell people this. And those tend to manifest themselves in the hierarchical structure of those religious institutions. So if you're inviting people of religious institutions to deliver prayer and women can't be preachers in that religion, then women are going to be underrepresented. And that's just how it's going to be, and that can be problematic. So you're, in a sense, amplifying this kind of practice. Now, let's talk Vancouver. This is the fun part. Let me get a quick splash of water here. So, we're not sure what went through the head of Vancouver because they haven't finished fulfilling their FOI, so we'll find out in a few weeks. But we describe Vancouver as failed ecumenicism. So here's what happens. They have a big inaugural meeting. They have a traditional welcome. It's like a 15-minute talk with drumming. Really cool stuff, like really getting into reconciliation and local peoples. Awesome. There was a speech from three different Indigenous leaders. Like, they made a really big effort to incorporate the different Indigenous communities in Vancouver. Super awesome, great for reconciliation. And then they invite five religious leaders to deliver prayers. We have a Roman Catholic deacon who delivers the Lord's Prayer, talks about humbly walking with the Lord. We have a female United Church minister who prays for justice, mercy, and humility. We have a senior rabbi who quotes the Torah, and he speaks of the role of prayer in the world, and he talks about help us to appreciate the plurality of the ways of living. Very ecumenical, lovely, flowery. There's a Sikh Granthi who quotes the guru, talks a bit about the history of his temple, talks about the beauty of cultural diversity. And there's a representative of the BC Muslim Association who quotes and speaks about the Quran. What I didn't tell you yet is this is 13 minutes long, and they each line up and do one sentence each. So it's like a high school group project where each person is starting with the Lord's Prayer, then we're transitioning over to some content about the Torah, then we're in the Talmud, then we're back to the Quran. It was 13 minutes long of just all this prayer content. Now, isn't that great? We've got five religions represented. That's all the religions in British Columbia, right? Like, done, finished. Great, problem solved. Yeah, except that there's definitely more than five religions. And there's some other trends you're gonna notice. Trend number one is this, what we call Abrahamic hegemony. So you've got two Christian representatives. I mean, we can get into the minutiae of Protestants and Catholics, and actually we shouldn't, let's not get into the minutiae of that. War's been fought over that. You've got two Christians, a Jew, and a Muslim. And this is not the start of a bad joke, but that's four out of five. Okay, and then you've got a Sikh. Great. But can we think of some other non-Abrahamic religions? This is like not a quiz question, but like I can think of non-Abrahamic religions you can invite. And you'll notice these are like the normal, heavy air quotes here, normal mainstream religions. And they're favoring A, some sect over others, right? So like, why did you invite the Reform rabbi and not the Hasidic rabbi? And then which Hasidic rabbi do you invite? And why the BC Muslim Association, not the other group? So there's certain sects that are being represented. They're also missing, and by the way, these aren't the top five religions in Vancouver. So not only are you representing some sects over others, and Abrahamic religions over non-Abrahamic religions, but where are the Buddhists and the Hindus? There are far more Buddhists and Hindus in Vancouver than there are Jews. If you look at a census, and the census just came out, so you could look at a census, it's freely available online. So it's clear that they didn't say we're going to take the top five or the top six religious groups, and if they did, we're going to find out with our FOI. Maybe like the Buddhists were just busy that day. Oh no, we couldn't possibly find a single Buddhist priest to deliver a content at our inaugural meeting. This is a problem for several reasons. The first one is, again, Abrahamic hegemony. We've got some sects are being represented over others, but then we have this deeper problem. You know, this is the BC Humanist. So like, we talk about this stuff because if you invite five religions, what you're doing is you're saying, we value religion over non-religion. We think religion's so important, we're gonna give it 13 minutes, five speakers, and they're gonna have free reign of our meeting for 13 minutes. Anyone who's non-religious, you are not welcome in this space. You're barely a guest in this space. And this is the problem when you elevate religion over non-religion. And so often when people think of these issues, they're thinking, well, we have to have a Protestant and a Catholic. We couldn't possibly represent one group over the other. But the deeper problem, of course, is when you do that, you're ignoring the fact that you're excluding all non-religious people. And that's when we always step in on these issues. But also, incidentally, we support religious expression and other groups that are ignored, right? Because you're only picking a few. So that's a bit of a problem. And so really, and Saguenay speaks to this, by the way. Saguenay says, a prayer, even a non-denominational one, is a religious practice that excludes atheists and agnostics. Full stop, paragraph 92. Even if a religious practice engaged in by the state is inclusive, it may nevertheless exclude believers. Because the idea is that here's a bunch of people who are celebrating religion, non-religion, you're not welcome here. And so this is why having five religious people doesn't solve the problem. It actually makes it worse. You're just excluding more people. And not to mention that, you know, the Scientologists and the Ekankarists and the Wiccans and the whole cavalcade and panoply of people who are listed in our census. Okay, a couple other trends that are fun to talk about, and we'll get to some fun questions. Silence and poetry. So we had three places that had moments of silence. What was interesting, in Ontario, in our study, 17.2, or 62 municipalities, had moments of silence. So in British Columbia, we don't do silence very well. I've never done silence very well. Apparently that's not a BC thing. The poetry was interesting because it shows us that you can solemnize an occasion without reaching for religion. Often one of the arguments that's used in favor of prayer is we need something to make people know this is an important occasion. You know, we've got the town crier marching in a ridiculous tricorn hat, or the Speaker of the House, you have a mace being marched in, there's pomp, there's circumstance. We actually had, this is actually wild, at our inaugural meeting, we had the police chief with an honor guard with like silver, specially prepared axes. And the joke was like, I'm hoping I could use those, you know? But people wear their best clothes, they're excited, but you can do that without religion. And the three municipalities that had poems show that you can do that without religion. I mean, you don't also just start the meeting off. There was piping. In one municipality, this is quite fun, the piper pipes them in, and then they do a shot of whiskey with the mayor. And you can see the mayor being like, okay, I guess we're shooting whiskey, and I gotta get my address in 5 minutes. All right, let's hope this works out okay. Apparently that's a tradition, actually. It happened at UBCM a couple days ago. They marched in, and the poor, lovely president of UBCM is sitting there. She's shooting whiskey back, and like, okay, the evening's gonna have to a start here. Here's another trend that we notice, and this is, I think we've invented this term. It's quite fun. So it's nice to be able to coin an expression. Stealth prayer. People trying to smuggle prayer into meetings. So some places, they accidentally put in prayer. We didn't know we could do it. Some places are like, we can't do prayer. Let's find a way around the barrier of church and state. Let's use ninjas. So what we saw in a few places, our definition is stealth prayer is an effort to surreptitiously engage in legislative prayer. And so the ways that you can do this are what we called prescriptive moments of silence. Now, if I say something like, join me for a minute of silent reflection before we begin this meeting. That's pretty cool. You know, it's not religious. It's just like, let's get our head in the game. We're gonna take a minute. All right, let's get to work. But if I say, take a minute with me to reflect on the opening line of the Canadian Charter, which reads, whereas Canada is founded on the principles that recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law. Let's think about that for a minute. I'm being prescriptive in my moment of silence. Now, I can't control what you're thinking about. You're thinking about dessert, beer, Candy Crush, who knows? But what's the difference between me saying join me in a loud prayer versus join me in a silent prayer? There's no difference. So we found prescriptive prayer is one way of smuggling prayer into meetings. We didn't find that in British Columbia. Ontario, they're a bit more sneaky out there. But what we did find was people using children to smuggle prayer into meetings. So Colwood, sorry, there was a spit reach in the second row there, sorry. Colwood invited a high school choir from a public high school to deliver a song. Fantastic. High school choirs will sing O Canada. It's great to get kids involved in municipal government. Love it. But they decided, for some reason, to sing Deo Gratias. My Latin's not very good. Which translates to thanks be to God. This is a Roman Catholic Eucharistic liturgy. It is a religious song. And so you have not one person delivering a prayer, but an entire high school choir of children delivering prayer. And it's very religious. And so this is something we're going to be exploring with the city of Colwood. We think it's the same as prayer. It hasn't really been tested in the courts, but there really doesn't seem to be a difference between having one person deliver prayer, having five people deliver prayer, having 35 high school students deliver prayer. It's still prayer. It doesn't get you around Saguenay. It doesn't matter how many people you have. It's still a violation. So those are some of the themes that we noticed. And the one thing I haven't talked about, and Ian and I both said that we would, is Indigenous content. And this has been something that's been evolving in Canada over the last few years, and it's one that we're still chewing over. We've published a paper on it. Every report, we explore the issue from a different angle, and we always find that in our presentations, this one produces the most interesting, engaging conversations, because it's a live issue, and it's complex, and there's layers and rich layers of conversation, politics, philosophy, values, law. It's great. So, what we found when it came to Indigenous content was there were prayers, blessings, welcomes, acknowledgements, drumming, singing, dancing, and speeches. 114 out of 161 municipalities had Indigenous content of some form or the other. Now, some of these, again, are strictly secular, traditional welcomes, but some of them use kind of, you know, spiritual language. They'll talk about the creator, and they'll use traditional terminology. Okay, that's one aspect. But then we have syncretism in Canada, right? There's a syncretic merger of a lot of traditional Indigenous content and culture with Catholicism and religion because of histories of, you know, reconciliation. What I meant to say was things like residential schools, right? So you have these syncretic combinations. In Saanich, in my municipality in 2018, we had a representative of the local Wasanic people deliver a traditional welcome. And I don't speak Wasanic, but I did hear the word Jesus mentioned three times. And the presenter crossed herself. So it gets complicated, though, because these traditional welcomes are protocol-laden ceremonies, right? So sometimes different communities will have a different way of welcoming people. And that might mean giving a speech. It might mean drumming, it might mean a number of things. And if it means expressing yourself based on your own personal beliefs, that may include personal syncretic religious beliefs. So it gets very complicated in that respect. But also, traditional welcomes aren't just invocations and blessings, right? They are diplomatic practices. So these would be things that, you know, Indigenous communities would do when they met. And so this is diplomacy. It's political, it's cultural, it's also spiritual for many people. And so it's really difficult to necessarily fit it in that religious box, right? Yes, the Catholic priest giving a prayer is definitely a prayer. Indigenous elder coming to drum doesn't seem like a prayer, but an Indigenous elder coming to talk, giving a speech and mentioning spiritual content, it's kind of the area that exists in between that space. And of course, it's a space that we want to foster because of reconciliation. So it's one that we're still trying to explore exactly how this fits. And it's fascinating. And I'll give you an example of these challenging cases. Like, there's always these cases in the middle that you're like, that one's interesting. So Jason Thompson, who's in Mission, he's the example I was giving you before where they asked him to come pray. He did two songs and he said, "Our way of prayer is simply good feelings and vibe, good thoughts and feelings. I'm going to drum for you." So clearly they asked him to pray, and, you know, he puts together a prayer. But, you know, there's that aspect. But then there's in Squamish where Alan Henry is given a blessing. He shows up. He's got a vest covered in crosses. And he says, "I actually just became ordained as a Shaker minister, like a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to pray in my way, and my way is a Shaker prayer." So he gives a Shaker prayer. And so it seems hugely problematic to invite someone to share their culture with you as part of reconciliation and then tell them what not to do. Like, there's tension in that, and we're exploring that tension. It's a live issue, and I'm sure we'll have conversation afterwards, but it's a fascinating live issue because it's one where you can see all the different parts kind of moving around. And you can't ignore the syncretism that's evolved over time as a result of, you know, attempted genocide. Okay, so we can talk about that afterwards. There's always questions about that. It's great. How effective was our advocacy? Our advocacy was very effective. This is the part where I get to toot our own horn and you know, praise our work. So it can be difficult, but the work that we've been doing has been effective. We found that other municipalities that we lobbied, all but two of them stopped praying in their inaugural meetings. So the ones that are on the list, the new naughty list, are municipalities that we didn't lobby heavily because we didn't think they would start prayer randomly. Only two. Terrace gave us credit for the change. Like, I'm a political scientist, and we're often looking, we can often say there's correlation, but getting causation is really difficult. Terrace sent us an email that was like, "Oh, well, hey guys, gee whiz, we didn't know we shouldn't pray. We'll stop that." And then they sent us another email a couple days later, which is great. And they're like, "Hey, you know, you mentioned we can't pray, right? We shouldn't have a nativity scene on our roof either, should we? We're going to take that off." And Ian's like, "Yeah, thanks. We didn't even know you had a nativity scene." And this sparked the biggest scandal to hit Terrace in probably ever. So, nativity scene banned from BC Town Hall after decades-long run, reads the headline. The next day, City Hall nativity scene debate not over yet. Spoiler alert, it is. Nativity scene letters flood into Terrace. I can only imagine those poor municipal councillors' inboxes. Editorial, better reasons needed for nativity scene ban, as if the Supreme Court wasn't good enough. And then it kind of ended with, they're not doing a nativity scene because they shouldn't. It's against the Constitution. But we have a municipality saying, "Hey guys, thanks so much. We didn't know. We're going to do better. We're also going to do a nativity scene watch. Keep our eyes on those in the winter season, just to remind people that maybe you shouldn't be doing this." So that was great. We also had the two Langleys pass motions. So rather than just like not doing something, because you know, for all we know, some of these municipalities were like, oh, they just forgot about the prayer. They just missed it that week. But the Langleys actively received our letters and changed their bylaws. So like that's an action. Someone's actually stepping up. Oh, sorry, the sun's not blinding people here. So I'm still moving around. I'm like, okay, it's not my blinding personality. So that was really reassuring. So we know for a fact that our advocacy is helping support separation of religion and government across British Columbia, and we're not done yet. So the next step we're gonna be doing is sending more letters. We're Canadians, we're polite after all. But these letters will be more firm to the outstanding municipalities, asking them to overtly change their practices not to include prayer. And we'll see how that goes. Our lawyer friends might get involved. You never know. It depends how recalcitrant and reactionary the municipalities are. Most municipalities, I think, would like to be on the right side of these things and follow the Constitution. But if we get any ones that are a little bit, I guess, truculent, we will take additional steps. And we'll need your support at some point, I'm sure. Now, I promise I compare it to other provinces. I don't want to take up too much time doing that because we could literally do comparative analysis for days, and I'll probably do a whole paper on that in a few years. Manitoba, when we studied Manitoba, we had 7 out of 110 municipalities had prayer, that's 6.9%. 5 of them were Christian pastors, 2 of them were delivered by staff, 5 out of 7 of them were men. So Manitoba, City of Winnipeg and I are not friends. They don't file FOIs very well, and they continue to have prayers in their regular meetings on a weird cycle. Each counselor delivering prayer. So it's on our list of things to do, which is like, Winnipeg, we're coming for you. This is a problem. You know, talk. They somehow think that having a revolving prayer solves the problem. But again, like Vancouver, having 5 prayers or having a revolving prayer doesn't solve the problem because you're still privileging religion over non-religion. And even if some of those revolving prayers are non-religious, you're not solving the deeper problem because you can never include all the religions of the world. Winnipeg would have to meet every single day till the sun exploded to cover all the religions. And the religions are being invented every day. And so you'd have a pretty hard time capturing the diversity of faith traditions available in Winnipeg and Manitoba. Ontario, 2018 inaugural meetings, 156 out of 328. That's 47.6%. The memo apparently got to British Columbia, but like Saguenay's closer to Ontario, but Ontario we had almost half the municipalities including prayer. Now we're in the process of updating our research, and we're gonna have a report coming out with the updates to see how the change has happened. Of those prayers, we didn't get a lot of audio recordings of them, but most of them were men. There was 21 moments of silence, and 9 regular meetings opened with prayer. So there's work to be done in Ontario. And we've seen across the other provinces, Alberta, Saskatchewan, the Maritimes, when we looked at it last time, you're looking at 5 or 6 municipalities that tend to have prayer in their inaugural meetings, 1 or 2 that might have them in their regular meetings. So we'll be releasing more reports on that very soon. Basically, the conclusion as I wrap up is we need to be compliant with Saguenay. It's been many years, it's been since 2015, and the BCHA is stretching across the country to remind people that we should make sure our municipal council meetings are inclusive places. Our advocacy has been very effective. So managed to make a good impact here in British Columbia. We're supporting efforts across the country. Stealth prayer, I think we discovered a new form of ways of circumventing the Constitution. I was very excited about things, new practices and tactics. So we're gonna be exploring that in the years to come. More research, of course, is needed. I'm an academic, I wouldn't say if it wasn't the case. And of course, the Indigenous content is something we're exploring in more depth. So we're gonna have richer data for British Columbia, and we'll be able to explore a little bit more how that's changed. And my thought is we'll probably end up creating a typology, categorizing different types of Indigenous content and seeing how they've changed over time and understand that a bit better. So the BC report's coming out this November to mark the first anniversary since the last inaugural meetings. We'll be writing to municipalities. There might be some legal stuff involved. We have reports coming out again for BC, Ontario, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and the Maritimes, and our ongoing project in the BC legislature. Every 4 or 5 years, we look at the prayers that have happened. We analyze them, add them to our massive database, and do some really cool quantitative research. And other stuff we're working on. So our research team doesn't just do legislative prayer. I know it's one of my favorite topics, but we do other stuff. We're not just, we do other jobs. Some of the stuff that we're working on that I'm very excited about is our work on crisis pregnancy centers. So we had a report come out with the Abortion Rights Coalition of Canada in March, and we're now doing a profile of each crisis pregnancy center in British Columbia. It's taken a bit longer because they keep changing their names and their locations, and they're super shifty. So our report, I think we'll already have one car that's out of date, but they just, they're super shifty. We're looking at religion in public schools, so you may have seen some content that Ian's been putting out on that across the country, and we're going to be diving into that in British Columbia. It's been very relevant as we're talking about schools and the role of schools as a safe place for children and some of the protests that we've seen across Canada, so it's super hyper-relevant. Tax exemptions or places of worship is on our research docket. We've been working on that for years. We'll be continuing to work on that. We have a book that we're working on. We have a new research assistant, Elaine, who's helping me put the book together, and it's Secularism and Non-Religion in Canada. It includes voices of activists sharing their stories and academic content, and it's going to be a really cool book project, and we're in the process of hunting down a publisher as we speak. And our research team is here to help, so issues arise. So sometimes we have a panic call, and we'll be discussing some issue that's just come up, or something that's on the horizon. And there's a whole host of things because we have to continue to fight to keep the separation of religion and government and ensure the state is neutral. So with that, I will wrap up. I'm happy to take questions, but thank you all very much for listening and putting up with my mediocre humor, and thank you all for coming out.